Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. Remember when Apple's FaceTime stopped working years ago? Turns out it was a deliberate part of Apple's planned obsolescence tactic. Well, it just got easier to run Ubuntu on Windows 10 as a virtual machine. And surprise, it's all thanks to Microsoft. Twitter has told an undisclosed number of users that their private messages may have been leaked to third parties for more than a year. And health officials who are looking at how to apply blockchain technology to public health issues consulted with Walmart on improving food supply traceability, and they plan to use the technology in the produce department. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? Just because Jeff is confused doesn't mean you have to be. Visit cat5.tv/dreamhost to sign up for unlimited web hosting for your website with unlimited email accounts, MySQL databases, the latest version of PHP, WordPress, and more, and even a free domain name registration. It's less than $6 per month, so sign up today. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. Remember when Apple's FaceTime stopped working years ago? Turns out that it was a deliberate part of Apple's planned obsolescence tactics. Apple is accused of deliberately crippling features for people who didn't upgrade their iPhones and iOS in a class action lawsuit over its FaceTime video conferencing software. Last week, U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh allowed a class action lawsuit against the tech giant to move forward after she rejected Apple's argument that it can do whatever it wants with people's iPhones because users agree to its terms of service agreements. At the heart of the lawsuit filed in California is a decision by Apple to kill off FaceTime for those who were not using the latest iPhone and latest operating system software. In April 2014, they had let a digital certificate expire prematurely, which broke the video conferencing service for anyone using version 6 or lower of iOS. Apple claimed that at the time that there was a bug and users needed to upgrade to the latest version, iOS 7, to fix things. But internal documents suggest that Apple knowingly broke FaceTime for tech holdouts because it was costing it money. 6 months earlier, the latest version of its operating system, iOS 7, had been released and included a fundamental change to the way FaceTime worked. But many iPhone 4 users were wary about iOS 7 because the resource-hungry upgrade made their phones run very slowly. So they stuck with iOS 6, but then FaceTime suddenly stopped working, and when asked about it, Apple told them to upgrade to iOS 7 or buy the latest phone, the iPhone 5. Now that Judge Koh has certified the lawsuit, this means that it can move forward as a class action lawsuit and pull in others who have been affected. But there are a couple of limitations. First, you have to live in California. Judge Koh rejected the attempt to make it a national class action lawsuit because the laws under consideration vary widely across the United States. And second, it can't be on a jailbroken phone. So if you live in California and got frustrated when your iPhone 4 became incredibly slow or were prevented from using FaceTime because you didn't want to upgrade to iOS 7, then you might be in line for a payout if the lawyers win the case. Of course, this being Apple, if it does lose, it will appeal the decision to the ends of the earth. So don't expect that money anytime soon.
Your thoughts?
Planned obsolescence seems like thievery to me.
It really does.
I don't like it one little bit.
Do you want to hear my experience as an Apple user?
Yes.
I'm not an Apple user. That's my experience as
an Apple user.
That's it.
Okay.
If you are an Apple user, I would encourage you, try the alternative. Just test it. Just see, give yourself a week. Borrow a friend's phone or something.
Right.
Put your SIM card in it and give it a try. Because there is a certain amount of freedom that comes from Android, for example, that
right.
you don't get with an Apple device. Now, my experience with Apple... I know you wanted to... I want to tell the story.
Tell me your story.
I went to Target, which opens stores here in Canada.
Yes.
Target opens stores here in Canada. And I went there.
Uh-huh.
And they had an electronics department, and they had a sale. And I bought an iPod Touch.
You did, eh?
I did, yeah.
And then?
And I hated it.
Ah.
Because I'm used to the freedom of an Android device and being able to drag on MP3 files, and iTunes is crap. And so I really felt confined with the iPod Touch.
Yes. They
Target pulled out of Canada.
They did. They did indeed, actually.
Like a day later, they up and moved out. And
so
I was stuck with this.
So.
Yeah, I figure, oh, yeah, I've got a couple weeks to, you know, if I really do not, I'm not the kind of guy who would buy something and return it.
Right.
But if I really don't like it, which I really didn't like it, I could have returned it. They were gone. They up and moved out. So I couldn't do anything about it. So I still have it, but it's useless. Now, I fired it up recently and I charged it up. And this was new, like a few years ago. And I've only used it once or twice. And
it's
I charged it up and I booted it up. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I can use it for something. Maybe I can pass it along to the kids or something. And I turned it on for the first time in that many years. And it wouldn't let me install anything. It said my operating system was out of date.
Obsolescence.
So I said, okay, well, give me the latest. I said, let's install the operating system. I said, give me the update.
Yeah.
This is not compatible with your version of the iPod Touch.
Get a new iPod Touch. Okay, so
how do you stand that?
Let me just rewind back in time. When I was a new co-host to Category 5, I had a MacBook and I had an iPhone.
Oh, yeah?
I did.
Okay.
And
I'm not into, I'm not trying to convert anyone
to. And the
reason
why I,
I just want you to feel that, like, try it.
The reason why I liked them is because they are simple. Now the reason that I hate them is because they are simple. You just can't do anything. You just, like, this planned obsolescence thing, to me, it angers me, but it also just reassures, like, yeah, of course it makes sense. Because they want you to like it and use it, and then all of a sudden throw that out and buy a new one and like it and use it and then throw it out.
But I understand that the Apple-using viewers are maybe not quite understanding what you're saying because, oh, but I love my iPhone.
Right.
But I promise that if you try something else and get out of that mindset of that cycle, I'm sure you'd be like, wow, why did I ever waste my money on that?
It's what's normal to you. So it became normal to me, right? I liked it because I knew it.
Yeah.
And then the new version is so similar to the old version that you feel like a genius, right?
Yeah.
Because, oh yeah, I know how to do that. I know where that is, right? Even though it's a brand new phone. And sometimes with Android, I don't feel like a genius.
Sure.
Sometimes I don't have a clue where things are, right?
Yeah.
And the newer versions. But you know what? It's forcing me to learn and grow. And I don't need to ditch my phone.
But it's not hard.
And I can't,
Don't misinterpret what she's saying. It's not difficult.
It's not difficult. I'm Sasha.
No, come on. I understand that challenge of, oh, well, the icons are not where they used to be. And I need to reinstall the apps that I want.
Yeah, like you have to double click a little bar instead of long holding it, right? Like,
how about this? I want MP3s. I want music on my phone.
Yeah.
So I take a cable and I plug it into my computer and I take all those files that I ripped from CDs and I just put them on the phone.
Yeah.
And then I unplug it and I push play and I'm done.
The end.
The end. If I want to use wires on my headphones, I can plug them in.
Right. I wouldn't super hate on any of the Apple products with the exception of the fact that this planned obsolescence thing, I think it's lawsuit worthy because it's thievery.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Enough about that. Let's
move on. So if you live in California.
Yes. Then
and you haven't jailbroken your iOS 4 device.
Which, what are you waiting for? You haven't
iOS 5.
I don't know how you haven't jailbroken it yet.
That's the problem. Yeah, well, it doesn't apply to you if you jailbroke it.
Exactly.
Come on, that's not fair.
So, okay, so don't break your phone if the plan was to do it tomorrow. Just be part of...
Hang tight. You're about to come into some money.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Well, it just got a whole lot easier to run Ubuntu on Windows 10 as a virtual machine. And surprise, it's all thanks to Microsoft. Windows 10 Pro users are now able to spin up an enhanced Ubuntu virtual machine directly from the Hyper-V Quick Create tool. The Hyper-V Gallery Ubuntu Image lets Windows users get a full Ubuntu 18.04 desktop session set up and running sooner with fewer post-install steps required to make it usable. The bootable Hyper-V image of Ubuntu 18.04 LTS comes with XRDP pre-configured to support enhanced session mode out of the box. Enhanced session mode in Hyper-V is kind of like guest tools in VirtualBox in that once enabled, you get better integration between host and guest, including clipboard support, dynamic desktop resizing, shared folders and drive redirection, and seamless mouse sharing. An awful lot of Ubuntu users run Ubuntu on Windows using virtual machines. Microsoft is aware of that fact, hence the creation of the Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL. Aware that many developers and IT admins on Windows rely on virtual machines to run Linux on Windows, Microsoft decided to roll its sleeves up and work with upstream XRDP, an implementation of Microsoft's RDP protocol for Linux, to iron out the kinks. And the result is this news. The Ubuntu 18.04 Hyper-V image, which is arguably more flexible than WSL, as it supports a full GUI session, has neat systems integration, and of course actually uses the Linux kernel. Microsoft says with only 3 mouse clicks, users will be able to get an Ubuntu VM running that offers clipboard functionality, drive redirection, and much more. In short, the addition of Ubuntu 18.04 to the Hyper-V gallery gives developers and system admins stuck on Windows 10 a faster way to install an optimized version of Ubuntu 18.04 using Hyperlink V.
Hyperlink V?
I don't even know.
Hyper-V.
They disappeared.
My experience so far, and if you watched episode number 575 of Category 5 Technology TV this week, is the installation process goes very, very well. And yes. I'm pleased that they're making this effort, but we weren't able to get it up and going and use it.
Yes.
But I can see the potential. Like, it's almost there. Maybe I've got to do some more work to get it up and going. Maybe it's not quite as easy as it.
Yet. Yeah. But it's so close, right? And it means that people who really do feel like stuck on Windows 10, and there are some situations where you really
work
would feel
computers.
Work computers.
And as a developer myself, I really would not want to be developing on Windows. Like, I want to be in a Linux environment using Linux tools.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is great, actually. I wonder what Linus would say.
He'd be cursing at them.
He can't right now.
I don't know why he's so angry right now. I think that this is a really great opportunity for Windows users who are interested in Linux.
Yes.
To give it a try. It makes me think back to a product called Wubi. It was simply called Wubi.
Wubi.
W-U-B-I.
Sounds fun.
Which was an Ubuntu implementation on Windows as well, but not a virtual machine. It was like, it was a different way of doing things. But this is actually running in a virtual machine on Hyper-V on Windows 10. So if you've got Windows 10 Pro, you can install it absolutely free.
Just a couple of clicks, really.
And I think that's an advantage for Microsoft.
Yes.
On Ubuntu, if you want to install a virtual machine of Windows, you have to have a Windows license.
Ah.
On Windows, if you want to install a virtual machine of Ubuntu, it's free. Because Ubuntu, Linux, is absolutely free. So there are some huge advantages to that way of doing things. But it's also an opportunity for you to try it out and get the feel of Ubuntu and say, you know, do I need Windows? I know that's not their intent, because otherwise they wouldn't do it. It's a development environment. But it does give you the chance to give it a try.
Exactly.
And it's free.
So what do you have to lose, really?
Exactly.
Like, you might as well just go ahead, do it, try it.
I think so.
It's already there.
And see if you can get it up and going better than I can.
Yeah.
Because so far I haven't got it up and going. I'm going to give it another try this week and see if I can get it working.
It ought to be a challenge.
It should be easy. Are you going to try it at home?
Well,
I'd love to have you report back next week if it works.
Here's the only thing that worries me is I don't know if I have my Windows 10 Pro. Like, I just don't know.
You know how you can tell, and I cheat, but I click on the start menu and I type 64-bit.
Okay.
And then it says tell if your computer is 32 or 64 bit, and then you just scroll down and it shows you the version of Windows that you're running.
Right.
It'll say Windows 10 Pro or Windows 10 Home. If you have Windows 10 Pro, you can install Hyper-V by going to Windows Features and Software, whatever. I do a quick search, Windows Features, turn Windows Features on and off. That's what I see there. And by going in there, I can easily install Hyper-V if I haven't got it already.
Right. Yeah. I would like to give this a try because, I mean, to tell
Please
you the
do.
Truth.
Please do. I'd love to hear how it goes.
I love Linux. I have a slight Linux bias. And I only have Windows for the gaming capabilities that Windows has. Mm-hmm. So if I can just...
Yeah, this is a way that you can boot into Ubuntu, into Linux, without replacing Windows.
Exactly.
So you don't have to get Windows off. You can still have it for all your games.
Because I did, I did think to myself at the time when we were sadly saying goodbye to Linux and getting Windows on our computer, I did think, can I dual boot? I just don't know enough.
But with a small SSD, because SSDs are traditionally a much smaller drive as far as capacity goes than a spinning drive.
So this seems to solve that.
There you go.
So
rock it this week. Let me know how it goes.
Let's see how it goes. Okay.
How it goes. We'll be interested in that.
Twitter has told an undisclosed number of users that their private messages may have been leaked to third parties for more than a year. The software bug, which has since been fixed, involved direct messages between users and businesses that offer customer services via Twitter. Affected users are being notified via a message that appeared when opening the app or logging onto Twitter's website. Twitter says the issue has persisted since May 2017. The company had said that it resolved the issue immediately upon discovering it on September 10th of this year after the bug had existed for around 500 days. Twitter said not all direct messages, which are supposed to be private, unlike normal tweets, were at risk, just those between users and companies, such as an airline. While Twitter states that they do not have evidence that the bug was exploited, they also express that they have no proof that it has not. So when I read this story, I think to myself, what Twitter user in the history of all Twitter users thinks ever that their messages will ever be private?
Oh, but Sasha, what Facebook user goes into Facebook Messenger and posts their phone number or their home address?
How do you do that? It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it just blows my mind that people would think, it's not good that this bug existed. But it also is not good that anybody would have put things into a message, even if it was supposed to be private, in Twitter. It just doesn't make sense.
We're such a connected world, though, and you've got an app where you're communicating. And these days, a lot of support is done through Twitter.
Right.
I will never pick up the phone and call Rogers.
Really?
Have you ever sat on hold with Rogers?
I don't have Twitter.
Have you sat on hold with Rogers?
Yes.
Have you? So how did that feel?
Well,
pretty great, huh? This is our local cable provider.
Side note. Okay, so Rogers is kind of crummy for being on hold, but my banking hold lets you choose which type of music you want to listen to
while
on hold.
That's the evolution of technology right there. But backing up to the Rogers scenario, I can't sit through that.
So do you talk to Rogers on Twitter?
I don't have time to sit through that. So I tweet to Rogers Helps.
What do you say? This is my social insurance number? Here, help
me. Absolutely. No, and this is where I do have some respect for Rogers in regards to their support, because they cleverly will not ask for information on Twitter. Okay?
See? They know.
Yeah. So what Rogers does, and this is smart, this is really clever, if you tweet to them, and say, my internet's down, or my phone is not working, or so on. And ironically, if the internet is down,
how are you tweeting?
Which is using, there's so much irony in this. So anyways, if there's a problem, you're sitting at Tim Hortons. Here we are in Canada. We got Rogers and Tim Hortons. Those are the only two companies, because Target is gone.
Yeah, they moved. They had iPhones.
So I'm tweeting to Rogers Helps, and I say, my internet at home is down, and they say, friend us or whatever it is on, follow us on Twitter and DM us, direct message us.
Okay.
So then I direct message and say, hi, I need your help. And they say, click on this link. And it takes me to a secure form on their website that asks me for things like my account number, my phone number, those kinds of things that they just need to authenticate my account.
Is that the spot that's being bugged?
No,
okay.
They're never, because they're not asking for that information in
Twitter.
In
they're
Twitter's
going,
direct
oh,
messages.
You're going to
I'm going
Rogers.
To their secure website, which I trust
okay.
is hopefully not exploited the same way Twitter is. So there, but there are companies that are maybe not as clever as Rogers in that regard. And I've never
right.
had such respect for that feature as I do now that this has happened.
Right.
In that Rogers has never asked me for my personal information in Twitter. They have,
right.
they've authenticated me as a user with that personal information through a secure portal.
Ah.
So and then they've come back to Twitter and said, okay, yep, we got your information. We know who you are. We've authenticated your account. How can we help?
I am so happy you're here because I have no experience in this. I do all of my authenticating over the phone. I call,
sure.
like I call, say, Rogers the other day.
Yeah.
And I had to authenticate who I was. And I just said to them right on the phone after a little bit of a hold, but like, I just need to prove to you who I am. What do you want to know? Right?
Yeah.
So, but I've always used phone contact.
Okay.
I've never used, I don't have Twitter. I also don't have Facebook. I also don't have Instagram. But this is a whole other situation.
I have Twitter, @ Robbie Ferguson. Message me.
Message
say
him.
Hello.
Don't
Follow
say
me.
Personal info
yeah.
in that message. Because nothing in Twitter in my mind was ever private anyway, so it blows my mind that you would think that it would be.
I think if anything, this is a wake-up call anyways to say, don't post your phone number, don't post your social insurance number, don't post your credit card number, don't put those kinds of things into third-party services.
Yeah.
Okay? So if somebody is asking for it, if it's the airline and they say, we need you to give us your credit card number
What's
for your deposit on Twitter.
Number?
Yeah. No, thank you. Is there some kind of third, like,
can I call you?
Form that we can use? Yeah. Some way to do this outside of that third party service.
I just, like, this to me seems so commonsensical, but only because I just don't use it, right? So I didn't, in my mind, I never assumed that a private message in Twitter would ever be private anyway. It's the same way an email is never private or,
yeah.
you know.
But some folks don't realize that, too. People send me their credit card number by email.
That is.
An email is plain text that is
that.
as easy for me to read your email as it is for, if I said my credit card number to you right now, out loud.
But what if we cover just
could the viewers pick up on that credit card number if I told you my credit card number right now?
That's
email.
I know.
That's email.
I sadly have to explain that to a ridiculous amount of people, and when I am giving you that sort of advice.
Sasha is giving you this advice, folks, so you know it's
this
true.
This is a bad situation.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Okay.
All right. Health officials who are looking at how to apply blockchain technology to public health issues consulted with Walmart on improving food supply traceability, and they plan to use the technology in the produce department.
Neat.
After hundreds of people in the U.S. became ill after eating contaminated romaine lettuce earlier this year.
Not meat.
Walmart, along with many other food retailers and restaurants, pulled the potentially tainted produce from their shelves after regulators issued a warning. The company says the outbreak could have been stemmed sooner if there were a faster and easier way to trace what people had eaten. Walmart thinks blockchain technology could be the solution. The big box company worked for more than a year with IBM and 11 food companies to develop a blockchain-enabled food traceability network. Now Walmart and its subsidiary, Sam's Club, will require their leafy green suppliers to use its blockchain technology to implement real-time end-to-end traceability back to farms within a year. The company announced today. The company claims its blockchain technology dramatically improves efficiency. In an early test, Walmart's vice president of food safety, Frank Yannis, brought in sliced mangoes and asked his team to stop everything that they were doing and trace that product back to its origin on a farm, a spokesperson said. It took them nearly 7 days, as the methods of tracking today are antiquated, sometimes done with pencil and paper. But using the blockchain, that tracking process can be done in 2.2 seconds. Looking back at the romaine issue, the stories had to throw out all romaine because there was no way to precisely identify which romaine was from the region where the contaminated lettuce originated. It not only affected Walmart, but all of the retail and even restaurants. All romaine had to go. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which has been working with IBM on applying blockchain solutions to other public health issues, consulted with Walmart on improving traceability to help public health officials investigate foodborne disease outbreaks and find the source of contaminated food. Walmart said the aim of the resulting blockchain system is to help reduce the number of people who fall ill during food incidents, while at the same time reducing losses for retailers and suppliers during a recall. The spokesperson said the information about Walmart's leafy greens will not be immediately available to consumers, but it's in their roadmap.
I love it.
I love it for a couple of reasons.
I have so many reasons to love this.
Okay, so I'm new to blockchain, so it kind of, to me, it's like this shimmering, perfect orb of information that I can't quite, like, pop into my brain. So I'm kind of new to it, so I'm going to need
to... It's like on the IT crowd, how the internet was this box. To her, the blockchain is this orb.
It's like, I need it in my brain, but I don't get it quite yet. But yep. What I do understand in this situation... For me, as a person who wants the environment to be as great as it can be, if you can reduce waste, for example,
sure.
throwing out all the romaine that's ever been produced in that moment
yeah.
by all of the farmers and all of the liters of water and all of the just the
that's a lot of waste,
labor
Sasha.
And that's insane.
So now take that one step further and say, okay, they've lost all that.
Right.
That's waste. But now look at the consumer's opinions of that produce now.
Right.
Okay? So when that happens, am I going to rush out the moment romaine lettuce is back on the shelf and buy up some romaine?
Right.
No, I've probably lost a lot of consumer confidence in the product.
Not knowing exactly how it was contaminated in the
yeah.
first place and whether or not it will be recontaminated and then how long it'll
is
take
Is this
before.
The contaminated lettuce?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a pro. So I may not buy it for a while. So now all of a sudden, further down the chain, the farmer who has just had all of their stuff pulled
right.
from the shelf, even though they had nothing to do with it, their produce was clean, theirs was a perfect operation, and yet their product is gone and they've lost all of their sales for the next 3 months because
right.
nobody wants to buy that product. That can happen.
This can be solved now.
Yeah, and how? So the blockchain is like this amazing encryption system that is decentralized. And when I say decentralized, the neat thing about it, all of these processes up until now.
Yes.
So when I, as a farmer, because look at me, I am obviously a farmer. If I, as a farmer, pick my mangoes.
Right.
And put down on the ledger that, okay, I picked my mangoes and I've shipped them to such and such a company. And then that company takes it and warehouses it. And then that company then ships it out and disperses it throughout the world because it's an international thing. Well, each hop along that way, everybody's jotting down the notes, whether they use a computer or whatever, but there's a complete disconnect between them and there's no way to trace them back. Or
right.
it's very, very difficult to trace them back to their origin. So now with the blockchain, as opposed to that methodology, everybody's using the same system to authenticate that produce. So as soon as I pick that mango, it gets assigned an ID, which is entirely unique. So now I know that this ID, this mango, was picked at this farm. And as soon as I take, yeah, at this time, and the weather was like this at that time in this region, as soon as I put it on the truck, it's still got the same blockchain ID. So now everything, it's got a history. And everything can be followed. Everything can be followed right through to the end. And because the blockchain is decentralized,
yes,
anyone can install it. Anyone can take
okay.
that orb and put it on their system, right? So Walmart can take the blockchain and have the blockchain.
Right.
Every other company, every little farm can take the blockchain and have the blockchain.
So if you find out that one farm with a small amount of romaine has distributed only one head of romaine to all these places and people got sick.
That's it.
You would know the rest of the romaine was safe.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But how?
So
is it a sticker? What is it? I'm so confused.
Well, it would have to be a sticker, or IBM has been working on chips.
Oh, okay.
For example, you look at, like, remember CDs? Do you remember CDs?
Yeah.
When you open the jewel case, there's a little bar of metal. And
yes,
that metal was programmed by the computer so that if someone walked out of the store and tried to steal it, it would set off a buzzer.
Oh, okay.
So think about that kind of technology. It's a very small sticker, sure. It could be something that goes under the skin. It could be these days, the technology's there. So
right. They
can work it into the blockchain, can become a part of the produce or the product.
Yeah.
But
so good.
It's really good. And so, as you say, if they find contaminated produce, so now think about that scenario of romaine lettuce. Here's contaminated produce. We can see, okay, this came off of this truck. It came from that farm. It was handled by this farm worker. And, that farm worker had this problem,
disease
or something, right?
Let's just say
a scenario.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. So, that farm worker also handled all of the, we can track it because it's on the blockchain. We can say, we have some of that in that store. They have it in that store over there. So pull just that one.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is fine.
Yeah.
Leave it up. And so no loss in consumer confidence.
Right.
I'm not worried because I'm actually very confident that they're keeping me safe by pulling the very product that is the one that's infected.
And no loss to our resources, which is a huge deal.
That's a big thing. But that's not my motivation. I want to know that my family's safe, and I want, and I do care about the farmer, and I want to know that I'm not losing consumer confidence for no reason.
Right.
Every time there's an E. coli outbreak, it's like, I don't feel confident to buy the produce that is involved. I'm not eating carrots for a couple months, you know?
I know.
It's just the way it is. That's our mindset. So this does away with that. And what's neat about it is that we now live in a time right now, for the very first time ever in the history of humankind, where this is possible.
Yes.
That's exciting.
It is. Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson. Thanks, everybody, for being here with us tonight or today, depending on what time you're watching and where you're watching from. We appreciate having you here. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been.
I think Jeff is back next week.
Yes.
And I know you will be back, and I look forward to seeing you again. Get onto our website, category5.tv. There's lots of great content there, and we look forward to seeing you again. Take care.